I'm Jonathan Capehart here from Leonard Lopate, and this is WNYC AM, FM, and WNYC.org. When was the last time you consulted a fold-out paper map in order to figure out where you were or how to get where you're going? Chances are, even if you still use paper maps, you may also be consulting MapQuest or Google Maps or the global positioning system installed in your car. What are these navigational tools, and where did they come from, and how do they work? We have two experts with us for today's edition of Please Explain to talk about the science and technology of navigation, and they will be taking your questions. I am joined by Richard B. Langley, a professor of geodesy and geomatics engineering at the University of New Brunswick in Canada. He has worked extensively with the Global Positioning System and is the author of The Guide to GPS Positioning. And I'm also joined by Joe Francica, Vice Publisher and Editor-in-Chief of Directions Magazine, an online locations technology publication. Welcome to you both.
Thanks very much, Jonathan.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. First, Dr. Langley, can you tell us a bit about the global positioning system? The GPS we find in a car, for example, how does that system work?
Okay. First of all, GPS really refers to the whole system. Mm-hmm. These days, a lot of people just call their GPS receiver a GPS, but GPS refers to the whole system. And first and foremost, that's a constellation of about 29 satellites orbiting about the Earth. That system is owned by the American taxpayer. That's who bought it. And it's managed by the federal government, both the Department of Defense and civil agencies, but it's looked after by the United States Air Force, mm-hmm. Who run a global network of monitoring stations to assess the health of the satellites and to upload information into the satellites on a daily basis. These satellites then transmit signals down to Earth, and with a suitable receiver, those signals are picked up and the position of the receiver determined. The way that that's actually done is to measure how long it takes a signal to go from a satellite to the receiver, and then knowing how fast those signals travel, which is at the speed of light, the distance to that satellite can be determined. And if the receiver can do that for four satellites simultaneously, mm-hmm. then it can come up with its position. That means its latitude, its longitude, and its height above mean sea level. And it also has to simultaneously determine time, because the whole system depends on the receiver's ability to accurately time how long it takes the signals to go from the satellite to the receiver.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's basically four unknown quantities that any GPS receiver has to determine, and that's why it has to be able to make measurements on four satellites simultaneously.
Huh. And let me point out to our listeners, if you want to call in with questions for our two guests, the phone number is 212-433-9692. Joe Francica, looking up a route on MapQuest or Google Map or Yahoo Map, that involves a different kind of technology, doesn't it?
Right. That would be what we would call a geographic information system. These systems typically take a digital street centerline network provided by a couple of commercial companies and displaying that information on an internet portal that MapQuest and Google provide. And then the underlying guts, the underlying software to be able to determine what the exact position on the ground is by looking up the address that somebody would provide to that internet portal.
Okay, Dr. Langley, is there a way of thinking about these two systems of mapping as being very different but linked? I mean, stepping back from both, how would you describe them and the relationship between them?
Well, basically what GPS provides you with is a position, mm-hmm. Some numbers, a latitude and a longitude, which can be related to an actual physical location, and can also be a point on a map. So you actually, the actual latitude and longitude probably doesn't do you much good. I mean, you know where you are, but where are you in relation to something else? And I think this is where maps and the electronic mapping technology comes in, because with GPS and with a map, whether it's a paper map or an electronic one, you know where you are on the map, mm-hmm. and that's information that you need in order to get from, let's say, where you are to some other place, a destination, also on the map, and have coordinates for it. And these electronic mapping technologies can actually figure out the best route for you to go from one place to another, whether you're driving a car or walking or you're on a boat or in an aircraft. And depending on your mode of transportation, the appropriate tool and technique is used to provide you with the optimum routing.
Mm-hmm.
And if, for example, there might be construction on a roadway, and the map navigation system knows that, it can deter you around that problem.
Mm-hmm. Joe Francisco, we've got quite a few phone calls, and I want to ask you this question, and then we'll take some of them because they're relevant. Can you tell us more about how the MapQuest and the Google Maps get their information? Where did the idea come from, first of all?
Well, MapQuest was one of the first ones out there, probably the first mapping portal out there in the mid-90s. That company was actually, the roots of that company were in a paper map company called R.R. Donnelly. They were acquired by America Online in the late 90s. And kind of has the best name recognition out there so far. So where they get their data, as I said before, is from commercial companies that actually go out and collect the street network. They collect the information digitally, and then MapQuest and Google and Microsoft, they all provide the mapping software to be able to display that digital information, and again, in a very aesthetically pleasing display on an internet portal.
Mm-hmm.
So... you know, that's really, you know, the guts of it is they're combining digital street line information along with many, many other points of interest, hotels, shopping centers, restaurants. And that's all collected in a primary, you know, in one local database. And then, of course, people are paying for that by the advertising that they see up and down the sides of the internet page.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's their business model at this point.
I'm going to take a call from George from the Upper West Side, but I want to repeat the phone number for listeners, 212-433-9692, if you want to call in with questions of either Dr. Langley or Joe Francisco. And we're going to go to George from the Upper West Side. What's your question, George?
Good afternoon. My problem is that of context. I am an inveterate map reader and enjoy reading maps a great deal. When I use MapQuest or any of the other online systems, I find it's designed for the lowest common denominator, in effect, treating you as stupidly as possible. You don't really get context. It's very hard for you to see alternative routes or consider other things you may want to do as means of getting there other than what the system tells you. And I'm wondering if there's any way online to do it, or must I stick to paper maps, because I find it terribly frustrating dealing
mm-hmm.
with the system.
Joe?
Yeah, there are limitations to the online mapping portals, that's for sure. They really are exposing only what they want you to see. There's a very limited view in terms of the mapping extents. You can zoom out, but then you lose some resolution in terms of how many streets that you see. So, you know, paper maps are still relevant for some things. They give you the wide view. They give you the detail. But they don't provide you with the interactivity. You can't, you know, do a lookup on your local restaurant. You can't get that information that you normally would have. This wide database of points of interest and other additional information is really what the internet is going to be able to provide. It's the ability to drill down into a varied set of additional information for the consumer.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to John in Newark, who has a similar question. John?
Hello?
Yep.
Yeah, hi. I wanted to find out. I just moved to a new house, and it's a new street. How do I get it on one of those services?
Yeah, that's a good question. These maps that you see on the internet portals are only updated every so often. Sometimes it's 6 months, it could be as long as a year or even 2 years, depending on how the internet portal receives the information and chooses to update the information. Many of these internet portal companies do receive the information regularly, perhaps monthly. But very new subdivisions, that's a real challenge. You know, the update features are not immediate. There's always going to be some lag time in there, particularly for high growth areas, South Florida, you know, Las Vegas, where streets are being added, you know, almost seems daily.
Yeah.
You know, those things are not updated in real time, which is the next challenge for these companies supplying data is, how do I get more real-time dynamic information to the consumer?
John, thank you for your call. I want to remind listeners the phone number is 212-433-9692. Dr. Langley, I believe this call from Richard in Philadelphia is perfect for you.
Okay.
Richard?
Yeah. My question was, let's say during wartime or whatever system, do we have an ability to turn off commercial or non-military GPS units so only we can use the system?
Well, the policy is that GPS is not going to be turned off as a whole. It hasn't been turned off yet, and the policy is not to turn it off. The military has alternative ways to control local access to GPS, and this is primarily through jamming. So in a theater of war, the military can selectively jam the civil signal on GPS so that the military can continue to use GPS and go about their business, but prevent any adversary from using it. So that's the policy, and that's how it will work. Because if they shut down GPS, not only is the military prevented from using GPS, which is a very important asset, but outside any theater of conflict, there's so much now depending on GPS, everything from our financial institutions to the airline industry, that really, except under extreme conditions, we couldn't contemplate having GPS shut down.
Richard, thank you for your call. I'm Jonathan Capehart here for Leonard Lopate, and we're talking about, well, actually this segment is Please Explain, and we're talking about global positioning systems and Google Maps and MapQuest and how it all works. This is New York Public Radio, WNYC AM, FM, and WNYC.org. Zach in the Bronx has a question that I believe is probably best for Dr. Langley, and we'll have Zach ask it. Zach?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I was calling, trying to figure out, me and my buddy Nathan are driving through New York right now. We travel, we're photographers, and we're constantly going to cities we've never been to. And we're trying to figure out what the best portable GPS product on the market right now, because there seems to be hundreds of them. And, we're wondering if you had an opinion on the best product out there for some traveling businessmen.
Well, pretty well all of the products on the market do a good job of determining your position as long as you have a clear view of the sky. Now, in sections of New York City, that can be a big problem, especially in the Wall Street area. And no GPS unit, depending solely on GPS signals, will do a good job in that area.
Right.
What you need is a system that combines GPS with some other sensors, such as the odometer in your car or gyroscopes, or accelerometers, and there are such systems available. Some of the built-in vehicle navigation systems come with those sensors provided, and they will actually help to navigate through problem areas, such as Wall Street, so you can continue to get a position, you can continue to navigate, even though you may not be able to see satellites or a sufficient number of satellites in the sky.
Okay, great. Dr. Langley, another question. People have been asking a lot about Magellan. Do you have a view on that?
By Magellan, of the receiver manufacturers.
Yeah.
Their equipment is very good, as is that produced by Garmin, another big receiver manufacturer, both of which have headquarters in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But don't ask me to say which is best.
No, of course not.
Magellan or Garmin, they're both produce excellent equipment.
Mm-hmm. You know, we've gotten a couple of these calls that we've taken. These are people who are clearly calling from their cars. And I believe one of you talked about there are people driving around gathering information. Did I hear that correctly? To get as up-to-date information as possible to use for some of these mapping navigational systems?
Yeah, this is Joe.
Joe, mm-hmm. Francisco.
Yeah, they are both companies that do this. A company called Navtech and another one called TeleAtlas have vehicles that drive the streets. They're equipped with cameras. They're equipped with, obviously, GPS devices, and they're capturing a number of different attribute information, such as street signs, road directions, class of streets, like whether it's an interstate or a state highway, and many, many other types of information that will eventually be resold and repackaged for very niche markets. I'll give you a good example. We're often routed to the front door of our house. Well, businesses are now looking to get a little bit more accurate than that. So some of the companies that are driving the streets are capturing even more sensitive data, like loading docks. I don't want to go to the front of the shopping store. I want to go to the loading dock. So these very, very more sophisticated, more accurate points that are of interest to logistics companies, transportation companies, and particularly emergency first responders need to have better information than just the front of the house.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Langley, GPS is controlled by the U.S. but allowed for use by anyone in the world?
That's correct. It's available 24 hours a day, in all weather, anywhere on or near the Earth's surface. So anyone with a GPS receiver can acquire the signals and determine their position wherever they might be.
So GPS uses, just to clarify, GPS uses satellites to pinpoint where we are, and MapQuest and others like Google Maps are about knowing what is around you. Are both coming to a cell phone anytime soon?
Yeah, I think the way you can look at it is GPS is the piece of equipment that acquires the position. The MapQuest and Google are ones that display and help you visualize this information. Those types of applications are being also displayed on portable navigation devices, cell phones, and you begin to see services offered by Sprint, Nextel, and Verizon, where a small map can be displayed on a cellular telephone.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get the map on the phone as well as the audible driving directions.
In fact, most cell phones sold today include a GPS receiver. That actually has been mandated by the Federal Communications Commission. A few years ago, they came up with a policy that requires all cell phones to be position identified when they're making an emergency call, a 911 call. With our landline telephones, the operator, when you make a 911 call, knows where that phone is, and they can dispatch people, responders, to your house, whether you're able to actually give the location of the house. You could be incapacitated and not
right.
be able to talk, but they know where that landline
right.
is. And they wanted to have that same capability with cell phones. Of course, a cell phone can be anywhere.
Right.
And so the cell phone companies, the network providers, had to come up with a way to determine the position of the cell phone. And it looks like there's a few ways to do that. But most of the companies have decided that GPS is the way to go. So virtually every cell phone now sold has a small GPS unit in it. Many users of the cell phone wouldn't actually know that there's a GPS receiver inside, and until they make a 911
mm-hmm.
call.
As
Joe mentions, some of the companies now are taking advantage of the cell phone having a GPS receiver and providing additional services to the cell phone user.
Mm-hmm. I'm speaking with Dr. Richard Langley, a professor of geodesy and geomatics engineering at the University of New Brunswick in Canada, and Joe Francica, vice publisher and editor-in-chief of Directions Magazine. Stay tuned, we'll be right back. I'm Jonathan Capehart here today for Leonard Lopate, and this is WNYC AM, FM, and WNYC.org. We are speaking with Dr. Richard Langley, a professor of geodesy at the University of New Brunswick in Canada, and Joe Francica, vice publisher and editor-in-chief of Directions Magazine, and this segment is Please Explain. Please explain GPS and Google Maps and MapQuest and all those things we can't seem to live without these days. For either of you, maybe for Joe, for some of us it feels as though this technology has burst upon us. It seems like all of a sudden this has happened. Why is that?
Well, of course, MapQuest has been very popular for many years to get, you know, standard driving directions. What happened in the last 18 months when Google came on the scene, obviously a very popular search engine, they added a satellite imagery to their maps. And all of a sudden, people got almost a real-life perspective mm-hmm. view of where their houses are. So they created a very nice boom in the market, and in particular for kids who, you know, like to play around with different programs, zoom in, zoom out, and tilt the Earth to see the topographical relief of land. And this gave a very nice picture, and I think you got a lot of people jazzed about mapping technology.
I forgot to mention the phone number for listeners to call in, 212-433-9692. And there was an interesting question that I believe it was Marilyn had, and she's disappeared, but I would ask her a question anyway, Marilyn, and that is this technology transferable from country to country? Could someone, say, in France go on to MapQuest and do all these things that we're talking about?
Well, so there's a couple of concerns there. One is, do you have the actual land base, the street network for the country? And there are other portals in Europe, for example, in Japan and China that service this. And so that's one aspect. You have to have the land information, the digital street network, to provide the visualization tool. And the second thing is the addressing scheme that you would need to do to look up an address. And so each country does have a different addressing scheme. So when you type in that address, certain things happen behind the scenes to be able to convert that street number and that street name into a latitude and longitude so it can be displayed on a map. And that's not a trivial exercise, but that's what needs to happen.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that's interesting is that with the exception of Marilyn, and I see there's Dina from Brooklyn, there more men seem to be calling about this. It seems to be a special interest of men in this technology. Why is that, do you think?
Perhaps men need more help in their directional awareness or their geographic literacy than perhaps women do.
Yeah, they don't like to ask directions, do they?
Right. I think there was one New York Times reporter in a story on all of this said that now men can do something that they're afraid to do in public in the privacy of their own homes, and that's ask directions. Dr. Langley, can you tell about Russia? Do they have their own version of a GPS system? And what about Europe and others?
Yeah. Russia has a system called GLONASS, which they started to develop soon after GPS got underway, which actually goes right back to 1973. Many people think GPS is something very, very recent, but the system design started back in 1973, and the first test satellites were launched in 1978. So we've come a long way since then. But Russia started to develop a system, and they had a full constellation of satellites operating by the mid 1990s. But as a result of the financial difficulties following the breakup of the Soviet Union, the number of satellites functioning, satellites drop. The GLONASS satellites aren't as long-lived, at least they haven't been in the past, as the GPS satellites, and when a satellite ceases to function, you've got to launch a replacement satellite to maintain the constellation. Well, Russia didn't have the money to do that, and so the constellation dwindled down to, I forget what it was, perhaps only 8 functioning satellites. And you can't really operate a navigation system with only 8 satellites. You have periods of time when no signals are available. But lately, they've been repopulating the constellation, and they're back up now, I think, to 16 satellites with the goal to having a fully functioning constellation again in a couple of years' time. And you can buy combined GPS and GLONASS receivers to operate with both of the constellations, and there's benefit from that in, for example, in positioning in cities where buildings might block some of the GPS satellites, mm-hmm. but still allow you to see some of the GLONASS satellites.
Mm-hmm. Joe, I'm sorry, Dr. Lane. Joe, there's something that we learned about in the research here, which I think is fascinating, because the applications of all this are very wide. Can you tell us about the idea of mapping a hospital and why that would be useful?
Yes, that's a really good question. The uses in hospitals and healthcare are wide-reaching, not just from the point of mapping individual patient locations in terms of epidemiology studies, where is the distribution of cancer patients, for example, or in case of emergencies, how is a doctor going to get to the individual care centers. That's kind of more of a macro scale. And more of a micro scale, think of the inside of a hospital as a map and separate floors as the individual map layers, such that you want to know where various hospital equipment is. The use of new technology called radio frequency identification, small chips that as they pass a sensor will indicate a location. Each of these little chips can go on medical devices. And one of the best examples I heard was the use of IV pumps. People in the hospital, nurses, doctors need to have an immediate need for an IV pump for a patient. Well, they may not necessarily know where all of those are. And in fact, hospitals sometimes buy more than they need, because they're often hidden and they don't know the location of those of the individual equipment. So knowing the location of various hospital equipment in an instant is much needed, and so it goes right to patient care as well as the cutting down on hospital costs. So
mm-hmm.
it's kind of mapping a micro geographic level of an area.
Wow. I'm Jonathan Capehart here for Leonard Lopate, and this is WNYC AM, FM, and WNYC.org. This is Please Explain, and we're talking about GPS and MapQuest and Google Maps. I'm talking with Dr. Richard Langley from the University of New Brunswick in Canada, and Joe Francica, who's the Vice Publisher and Editor-in-Chief of Directions Magazine. I want to go to Dina in Brooklyn, who has a very good question about the utility of these maps. Dina?
Hi. I was really impressed with the technology. I'm actually my boyfriend and I are looking to buy a house in Manchester in the UK, and I was so impressed that I could zoom right into the street and see where the house was. However, in looking at a strange city for me, I can't tell where train stations are, like how good or bad the commute is going to be, and I'm just wondering why the technology is so car-central. I'm also an avid bike rider, and I would love to know the best, safest bike routes in New York City, things like that.
That's a great question, and one in which the mapping portals should take notice, because in terms of multimodal transportation, you want that information. Now, there are services, I think, that are beginning to come about that will route as a multimodal event. I'm not, I don't right off the top of my head have the name of those, but that is a concern. It's something that Google and MapQuest and Microsoft ought to look into. And you're right, it is difficult at this point, but it's a...
I might add, though, that many of the car navigation systems or even the portable navigation system that even a bike rider can use, the mapping that's in those systems and the points of interest do typically include places like railway stations, airports, churches, and so on, and may even actually provide the best bicycling route. This is the portable navigation system I have from a Dutch company, actually will show you the best biking route from one place to another.
Dina talked about being able to zoom in on a house in Birmingham that she wants to look at. Mahari in Garden City has a similar question, but different use. Mahari?
Yes, yes. Good afternoon. Well, Google Maps, there's a feature, as you know, the satellite feature, where you can zoom in. I zoom into my house sometimes and see my car parked, and it's really fascinating. But sometimes when I zoom in, say, in eastern Long Island, up to a certain point, but anything closer, is you can see it's blocked. Is there any way to actually request that your house be blocked if you want to? Or, and why are these places, certain places, blocked?
That's a good question.
Yeah, that is a good question. I'm not certain that if you made a request to Google that they'd block your house. I guess they don't know the answer to the question whether you could send a request to them and do that.
But I believe some militarily sensitive areas are in fact blocked or at least blurred on those images. Is that correct, Joe?
Yeah, some of them are blurred because exactly what you said. Yes, the sensitivity of the location.
Mm-hmm. So, what do you think is driving this technology and its popularity? Is it our desire to get location information in real time, or as close to real time as possible?
Well, I think that's part of it, and you know what eventually we're going to want is more real time dynamic information. I think we never thought we would want a 24-hour weather channel before they came on board, and so you can envision a time where there'd be a 24-hour traffic channel, and many cities already have something similar to that. You might be want 24-hour crime data, and so I think the eventual goal is, and it'll be demanded by the consumer, is specific information that will be of a real-time nature.
Mm-hmm. Is there any downside to all this detailed mapping information being available? Privacy issues, for example, as Mahari was talking about?
Well, those have surfaced. They've surfaced more in the cellular telecommunication area. But a lot of it has to do with opting into a service. You know, your family, you want to know where family members are. Because what Dr. Langley mentioned about, emergency facilities and being able to, locate a person because of an emergency event, that's the trade-off.
Mm-hmm. But there are some of these location-based services that are coming to the cell phone where it's conceived, for example, if you are driving past a store that's got a sale on, they could know your position and send you a little coupon or an alert that a sale is going on. And so you might want to have the capability to actually switch off that capability on your cell phone, but of course still have the 911 emergency feature, but perhaps block others from accessing your position.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Langley, we're almost, and Mr. Franziger, we're almost out of time, but Dr. Langley, I wanted to ask you about geocaching. This makes it possible to do sort of a global treasure hunt? What is this?
Yeah, this is a new game that's been becoming more and more popular thanks to GPS. And basically what it involves is hiding a little treasure somewhere. And by treasure, we mean trinkets, perhaps a brochure on your local community, and hiding it, but determining as accurately as possible the coordinates using GPS. And then publishing the coordinates online somewhere and allowing anyone then to go and try to find the treasure. And typically they might take some of the trinkets but put some stuff back in return. And it's become a very popular hobby for some GPS receiver owners.
Now, is this just a U.S. thing, or is this really
a
global thing?
No, it's global now because, as I mentioned, GPS is available anywhere, and right now it's thanks to GPS. I didn't mention it, but there's a European system that's going to be coming online very soon, called Galileo. They've already launched the first test satellite. It'll be complementary to GPS, and again, we'll have multiple system receivers that can be used not only in geocaching, but in all of the other applications of what we call now the Global Navigation Satellite System.
We have just about a minute left, and I want you both to put on your Karnak hat, so look into your crystal ball, and just say, how do you think things will look a few years down the road?
I think that we haven't even envisioned all of the types of location-based services that may be offered to both consumer and businesses, and that's one of the last things I want to point out, is there's tremendous use of this technology in business and cost savings potential benefits to locating stores and finding fleets and all that. So I think there'll be more and more applications coming on down the road, and many of them just haven't been thought of yet, and it's creating a great entrepreneurial stage for many people.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Langley, real fast.
Most of the applications that we have today weren't dreamed of in 1973 when the developers of GPS first started working on the system. In fact, there's a lot of the applications we didn't even mention today, like machine control mm-hmm. and monitoring the deformation of the Earth's plates, all which can be done with this technology.
Dr. Langley, thank you very much. Dr. Langley, professor of geodesy at University of New Brunswick, and Joe Francica, vice publisher of Directions Magazine. This was Please Explain. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.